So this past week, how did God use you to influence someone to fully follow Jesus? Did you ever just stop and ask yourself that question at the end of the day? You know, we've been talking about that being our mission statement, that influencing people to fully follow Jesus is what we're about as a church, but also what we are to be about as individuals. So what a great question to ask yourself in the morning. God, how do you want to use me to influence somebody to follow you today? And as you put your head on the pillow at night, God, wow, that was neat. Or, boy, God, maybe it wasn't today, but I'd sure love to see it tomorrow. And what are you doing to intentionally see that happen, to partner with God in influencing other people in their lives? There really is no greater calling. And that's part of what the series is about, is that it's a calling to something more significant. And so as we've talked about moving from a lesser life, a life that is self-centered, focused on me, what I want, what I desire, and instead moving away from that and moving to a Christ-centered life, it's really a movement towards freedom. And we don't often see it that way. We sometimes see as moving to a faith towards a faith-based life or following Jesus as maybe restrictive, perhaps. There's lots of things you have to do and things you can't do. And instead, God never intended to be that way. He wanted to free us from the slavery, really, of living a self-centered life, knowing that it would never really fulfill us, and move us instead to a life that's centered around Him, where we're giving, where we're seeing ourselves be used for something far greater than what we could ever do on our own or come up with on our own. And so as a part of talking about what does it mean to live a Christ-centered life, last week we looked at community. And we talked about the fact that we are not here for ourselves, we're here for others. It's not me, but we. And what does it mean to live in true community? And we unpacked that last week. And we talked about the fact that Jesus instituted a new family. And he called people to a high level of commitment to this family. And so Paul wrote about us being brothers and sisters. And as we meet here, for those of us who are followers of Jesus, that's what we are. We're all part of God's family. And we need to treat each other as the way a family should treat one another. That's God's desire and intention for us. And that means a deep level of commitment. And then this week, we want to talk about the second aspect of living a Christ-centered life, and that's the theme of generosity. Generosity. Now, as soon as they say that word, the idea that I want to unpack is moving from not mine but ours. And that word often is related to financial giving. And certainly that's an aspect, and we're actually going to talk a little bit about that today. But I want to be clear, generosity is so much bigger than what you do with your money. It certainly includes that, but it's a lot bigger than that. And so we want to unpack this. It's really the idea of sharing what has been given to me with others, sharing God's blessings. And all of us have been blessed by God in some aspect, in some way. And God calls us as his followers to not just receive the blessings that he's given us. He loves to bless us. But he wants us then to take them and to share those with other people who are around us. This is not new. This is something God intended from the very beginning. You go back to the call of Abraham when God said, I'm going to start a nation, and this nation is going to demonstrate to the world what it looks like to follow me. He calls Abraham, and the very first thing he says to him is, Abraham, I'm going to bless you. I love to give. I'm a giving God, and I'm going to bless you. But then he quickly says, and you will be a blessing. My intention to bless you is so that you can in turn bless the world. Abraham, through you will come a nation that I intend to be a blessing to the world. And indeed, Jesus Christ came through the nation of Israel and has been the blessing to the world. So certainly that's God's heart. It's what he wants us to do. But I'd like to look at a particular story this morning in the life of Jesus, something that Jesus said and did that I think is very instructive when we think about this idea of generosity. But let me give you a little bit of background before we jump into the passage. If you want to begin turning, Mark chapter 12 is where we're going to be. Mark chapter 12 in the Pew Bible, it's page 1005, and you can open up and follow along. That would be great. But in Jesus' day, there was the center point of Jerusalem and of religious life in Jesus' day was Herod's temple. Herod had built this amazing temple. It was even bigger than Solomon's temple, and it was the place of Jewish worship. It's where they would come to offer their sacrifices. It is where they would come to offer their financial gifts. It was where you came to meet with God. And that's why Jesus was so upset to see his temple being used for things that were not godly, because he wanted to make sure that everybody could come and access God. And it was kind of a center point of coming and offering your worship. And as we look at the temple, you see that the very outside the walls, was called the court of the Gentiles. Those who were not Jews were welcome to come and worship this God. He was not exclusive to the Jews only. As you moved into that, the largest court you might see there is called the Court of the Women, or the Court of Women. And that would be where women could come in. Men was also becoming in that area. And in that area, you would have the giving boxes. And so people would come and offer their offerings, financial offerings. And there were 13 different receptacles, and they were for different purposes. But basically, they were kind of shaped like a trumpet. So they were narrow at the top, and then they would widen out and go into like a box, something along those lines. And people would come and deposit their gift, deposit their offering in one of these receptacles. And that was a common part of the practice of Jewish religious life. And we need to understand that picture. So it's in this court, this women's courtyard, that Jesus is with his disciples and where this story takes place. So we're going to pick it up in verse 41 of Mark chapter 12. Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in two very small copper coins worth only a few cents. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "Truly, I tell you, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on." And Jesus seems to want to teach them something through this thing that he's observed. And we'll get to that in a moment. But we need to understand a little bit more of what was happening in that day, because I want to be very clear. Jesus was not just writing off anybody who was giving larger gifts. That's not what he was doing. But in that day, there was a practice that was very, very common. And Jesus had spoken against it on several different occasions. And that was that many people gave to draw attention to themselves. They would give in such a way that everybody would know what they gave and that they were a big giver or whatever, that they were generous. So they weren't necessarily being generous because of the right reasons. They were being generous because of the praise that they would receive from other people. The religious leaders certainly were caught up in this practice, and Jesus spoke out about it. In fact, it's interesting, if you back up just a couple of verses right before this story, and by the way, the order in which we have the stories is for a purpose. God even moved the writers to put the stories in the order that they're in so that we can see some of these links that occur, and I think this is an important one. If you look up at verse 38, Jesus warned the people about the teachers of the law. And he said, "Listen, these are people who like to walk around in flowing robes and be greeted with respect in the marketplaces. They have the most important seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at banquets. They devour widows' houses and for a show make lengthy prayers. These men will be punished most severely." Jesus was very against being ostentatious, being demonstrative, being showy in your religious practices. It wasn't that the practices were bad. It was how they were doing the practices that Jesus spoke against. Matthew chapter 6, you don't need to turn there, but just listen. In Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, he addresses the same issue, and he says this: "Be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven." He warns the people, be careful. Don't do your good deeds to be seen by other people. That's not what it's about. This is not about one-upmanship. This is not about see how great I can do. God is the one that we're supposed to be doing this for, not for other people. Generosity should be motivated from somewhere different than just the accolades that we get. So Jesus goes on to say, so how do you do it? When you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets to be honored by others. Truly I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. There was a practice in the day that as people offer their financial gifts, they would sometimes, not everybody, but there was a sense of which it was almost okay or expected to demonstrate how significant your gift was. And I think that's what Jesus was referring to as he was sitting there with his disciples, just watching people come in and offer their gifts. He's just watching. He's just watching. He says some of the wealthy came in, and it's interesting the word, they threw their gift in. And the idea of how you might do that, I want to try to illustrate this. And I want you to imagine, if you would, imagine a day where we have no credit cards, no electronic means of transferring funds. We have no paper money, okay? All we have are coins. And some of those coins are obviously highly valuable compared to others that are not. And so you come to church and you come ready to give. And the offering plate gets passed and you bring your offering, right? You're ready to go. So first of all, you bring it in like this. Right? You know, it has a nice jingle to it. And then when the plate comes by, you give like this. The louder the better, right? That's the idea, okay? Because the louder you can be, the more attention you draw to what it is that you're doing. Now, we're laughing because you can't imagine us doing something like that, right? Yeah. That was good. That was good. You can't imagine us doing something like that, right? Right. But that's how it would often be. And, you know, my very not so... Anyway, I tried. So that's what we did. So that's often what was happening. And Jesus is probably witnessing something like that. And then a woman comes in. And I have to say that probably nobody noticed her. Or if they did, they noticed her because of the clothes she was wearing were probably very worn, very tattered. She had very little. She was poor and she was a widow. To be a widow in that day meant you didn't have the financial resources that came obviously from your husband, and women unfortunately really had very little opportunity. So to be a widow often meant you were in a very dire financial situation. You didn't have people, especially if you didn't have other family members who would step up and take care of you, you could be in a very difficult spot. So here comes this woman, and she's coming in with everybody else. And by the way, this is a time of a feast in Jerusalem. So tons of people are coming in and out. This is a huge time for people to come and offer their gifts. This isn't just like one or two people wandering in. This is masses of people coming in and going out. And Jesus is just watching. And I would guess that very few people, if anybody, noticed this woman. And yet Jesus seems to pick her out of the crowd, and he watches her. And she comes up to offer her gift, and she's got two small coins, basically next to nothing. Even in their money, it was barely worth a penny. So she comes in, and I highly doubt she went. I think she probably carefully dropped it in to try to make the least noise she could, because she really didn't have much to give. There wasn't much there for her to offer. But she came to offer what she could, and as much as Jesus' disciples might have been watching some of the others and saying, wow, look at that one. Look what they gave. Like, that's great. Look at the temples getting that gift. That's wonderful. And, oh, look at that one. And look at that one over there. Jesus points out somebody different. And he says, truly, I tell you, listen up, guys. When Jesus says, truly, I tell you, he wants their attention. I tell you the truth. He would often say, listen to me. This poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. That's not true, Jesus. It's not. These other people have put in way more than she did. Probably almost everybody else who came put in more than she did. She put in so little. It's next to nothing. You might even say, what does it even, you know what, just stay home. Don't even worry about it. It's not going to do anything. But Jesus notices. And he notices in a positive way. He says, they all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on. And Jesus here shows that he often sees what we as people overlook. We tend to look at the outside of things. We tend to make judgment calls based on such things. And yet Jesus looks deeper, and he looks beyond what's on the external. And he sees, he knows that this woman doesn't have much. And he knows that what she's giving is all she has. He has this knowledge of what's going on. And he commends her to his disciples. I wonder if he's somewhat sad, feeling as she might even be being taken advantage of by some of the religious leaders who were actually saying, no, you got to give. Even to the point where people would have nothing. I don't see Jesus saying that to people, but he recognizes that she's giving not to please anybody, not to put on a show. There's something else motivating her. See, Jesus is not impressed by the amount that we give. And again, this is not just financial. This is one example. But we can give in a lot of different ways. And there's a lot of different ways we can give. In means of how we do it. But Jesus sees the heart of the giver. And the heart is what's important to him. Sure, he wants us to give, and we're going to see that. But he looks at the heart. And I think of this woman, and I think of her situation, and why did she give? Why? We don't know. We're not told. But I can tell you this. You wouldn't give unless you believed there was a God who would provide for you. Especially when it was all you had. And one of the things I love about this woman is she seems to have a tremendous faith in God. That doing what she can, and that's all she can do, God will see it and God will provide for her. True generosity requires faith in God to provide. You see, some of the wealthy people were giving large amounts, but it wasn't really affecting them. They had plenty more. They were well taken care of. But in proportion, the amount that she gave was so sacrificial, so huge in Jesus' eyes, he wanted to draw attention to it. Again, it's not the amount, it's the heart. And true generosity requires faith in God to provide. And I think the question we sometimes ask is, God, if I give of all different areas, and we'll talk about some in a minute, will you truly take care of me? Will you truly take care of me? And I think that's a logical question to ask, right? And I think Jesus has answered it, and I think the Scriptures answer his question. Here's one example I think is a great illustration. It's another widow that we find, this one in the Old Testament. And this widow is, Elijah sent to her. There's a famine in the land. There's no water. And she's down to her last oil, her last opportunity to make one final meal for her and her son. She really is. And she's out gathering sticks to make a fire. She's going to make one last meal. And then as far as she knows, they're going to die because there's no more food. And God says, I've got a widow for you to go to, Elijah. I want you to go and ask her to feed you. And so he goes and he asks this woman if he could have some food. And she says, look, this is all I got and I'm going to make it and that's it. We're out. And he says, go ahead and give me some. Sounds so pretentious to me. Like this widow has nothing and you're saying God has told you to go ask from her something. It just sounds, but see, God has something bigger in mind, right? And so she does it. She makes this food, this last bit of food, and she gives some to Elijah. She gives it to Elijah. Now she has nothing. She's given all that she has to him. And what happens? God causes her oil to not run out until the famine is ended. So every time she goes to make something, she's got a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more because God does provide. When he asks us to give, he will take care of us. That's his character. That's his nature. He loves us as his children, and that's what he's going to do. You can read that story in 1 Kings chapter 17 if you want to read it sometime. So we have examples that Jesus has done this, that God has done this in the past. But will he? Will he, Jesus? What do you say about this? And in Matthew chapter 6, again, Jesus makes these statements in there. If you've been around the church for a while, they're probably somewhat familiar to you. But Jesus says, I tell you, don't worry about your life, what you're going to eat or what you're going to drink, about your body, what you're going to wear. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothes? There's something bigger. I want something grander than you to worry about the everyday. Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? And why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you, you of little faith? So don't worry, saying, what shall we eat or what shall we drink or what shall we wear? For those who don't know me run after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. You see, that's the heart of Jesus towards us, towards people. He loves to provide. And so we can be generous knowing that we have a God who will take care of us. And so sometimes my lack of generosity forces me to check back what my view of God is. Am I not being generous because I don't trust God to provide for me? Or am I not being generous because I'm being me-centered, self-centered, and I just want to enjoy these blessings for myself? The more, the better for me. In Luke chapter 6, verse 38, Jesus says these words and uses this agricultural analogy. He says, give and it will be given to you. Very simple principle. You give and it will be given to you. Well, who's going to give to me? I don't know. God's going to take care of you. He's going to make sure that you're okay. Given it will be given to you. A good measure. How will it be given to me? Okay, I give. Do I get the same amount back? How does this work, God? I want to know how this transaction is going to take place. So if I put $20 in the plate and I go home, do I find $20 on the street? Is that how this works? Right? Wouldn't you like to know that, right? Yeah. Offerings would go up if we knew when we left here that we get the same amount back, right? Exactly, right? Hey, I'm in. Many times it's a test of our faith. And here's the character of God. So he uses this agriculture analogy. So you would go and you would buy a bushel of wheat or whatever it is that you were buying, right? And so you would buy it and it would fill the basket. You would go and take your basket and they would fill it. And so you have a number of ways in which that could happen. You could just fill it and then walk away. Or the person could say, oh, no, hold on. Shake it. Get it down as far as you can. Stomp on it. I've always pictured doing leaf bags. I have a personal challenge of how many leaves I can fit in a leaf bag. I made the mistake of paying my children so much a bag. They were very light in the beginning. They're smart kids. But you stomp it down. You get as much in there as you can. You keep packing it in and packing it in and packing it in, right? And that's how God's attitude is. He says, a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be poured into your lap. That is the character of God. He's a generous God. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. You see, there's a sense in which God is watching all of us in our generosity. And he's just simply saying, look, as generous as you want to be, I can match you. I can match you. You're not going to outgive me. I'm God. I've got all the resources available to me. I'm a loving heavenly Father. And that's what God desires of us. That as we move from being self-centered, we will see our generosity increase as we move towards being Christ-centered. Now, what are some areas that we can be generous in? Because it isn't just about our finances. And so I want to talk about real quick about four areas where we can be generous. We can be generous with our time. We all get the same amount of time, right? But we get to choose many times how we use it. I know there's certain obligations that we have, maybe work or different things, school that you have to do. But there is time, and we call it sometimes discretionary time. We hear stories that we have more discretionary time in America than we've ever had before, and yet we feel like we have less time than we ever had before. We're busier than we've ever had before. But if you stop and see the choices that you're making, we do fill our schedules with things. What are we filling our schedule with? Is there a place in there where we choose to invest our time to be generous, to serve, to help, to do something for somebody else? I'll get to these in just a minute. You can take that one off for a sec. Thanks. Talent. I saw you all looking at the picture, so I realized something was up there. Talent's another thing we can be generous with. We are all blessed with something. We all have ability in some area. We all have a passion, something that we really like to do, and perhaps we've gotten pretty good at it. And we can use that talent to be a blessing, to be generous, to share with other people. And God loves it when we do things like that. Am I using the talents that God has given me all for myself? Or am I also using those talents and abilities to be a blessing for other people? Our treasure. And this has to do with our financial resources as well as our material goods. And I think we see from the story of the widow that of Jesus who was watching her that everybody has something to give. Sometimes we have this mentality that I'll wait until I have enough and then I'll give. And I just got to tell you that you'll probably be waiting a long time. Because first of all, how much is enough? God says, be generous and trust me and I will take care of you. This isn't a plea for you to give more in the offering. That's not what I'm doing. I'm talking about being generous in how you give broad-based in all different facets. You may be generous and, you know, I think of the very simple things. If you ever go to Aldi, you have the shopping cart. We have to get a quarter, right, to get your shopping cart. You give the shopping cart away and you don't get your quarter back. You can be generous. That's so generous of us, isn't it, right? But it comes down to big or little. It's just an attitude that we have of saying, how can I use what I have to be a blessing to other people? Some of you are like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Just go to Aldi. You'll understand what I'm talking about, all right? We all have treasure of some facet. And then we all have a tongue. And just to keep with the T's, we're going to use this word. But really, it's our words. We all have a tongue, and with it we speak. And James warns us that our tongue can be very, very dangerous. It can be sharp and biting and like a fire that destroys. But it also can be something that gives life and encouragement. Like Paul encourages us in Ephesians chapter 4, that our words would be wholesome and uplifting and benefit those who listen. We can be generous with our praise. We can be generous with our gratitude and thankfulness in our words. Are you a person who is generous with the things that you say that build other people up? May we all be that. So many times we probably have things get through our head. Oh, you know, that was a really good job, or that looks really nice. And just take the effort to say it. Send the text. Make the call. Verbally say it to the person face to face. Whatever it may be, let's use our tongues to be generous in a positive way. Doesn't necessarily mean you need to talk more. It just means we need to be positive in what we say. Just wanted to say that. It doesn't require a great talent to be a blessing with our words. We all can do it. We can get better at it, but we all can do it. So let's take a look real quick at what generosity looks like. If it's our time, talent, treasure, our tongue, our words, what does it look like? And here's where I want to use some of these pictures. Generosity looks like this. This was the tailgate party where a couple families decided that they were going to bless anybody and everybody. We're supposed to bring our own food. They decided to bring enough food for everybody. And so as you walked up, you got all kinds of different wings you could choose from. I don't even know all the food that they had there. But they had tons of food. And they were just giving it away to anybody. They just wanted to be part of the celebration and do it. That's what generosity looks like. I have no idea what that cost them, but they sure seemed to have a lot of fun. I got to tell you, in what they were doing. We see the next picture, generosity of our time. It doesn't matter how old you are, how young you are. This is somebody watching our kids during the MOPS ministry. What a great opportunity to invest a couple hours a week to do something that can be eternally significant so that moms can come in community and just have relationships with each other, support one another, learn how God views their parenting, their mothering, their being wives, and all other aspects of their lives just because somebody was willing to be generous with their time. I think of Zip Camp this last year, and if you were around, you saw all these green shirts. And in this picture, every green shirt's a staff member. We had over 100 people volunteer and give of their time all week, some even taking the week off of work, taking vacation, giving of their time so that they could invest in kids and have them understand how living an amped life for Jesus is the best life that we can live. What a great opportunity to invest time and talent. Many of you invested your talent to make this work, from sewing to cooking to music to drama to puppets to art to sports to all the different things that happened during the course of that week. It was a week of generosity. I think of a group of guys and some women I think have gone too who have done part of the Go Fix team that go around and do different projects. And this is just one of the ones that they did, the team that went, but from Haycock to Mount Gilead to projects at the church to going to other states for disaster relief. There's opportunity to be generous with their time and their talent to serve God, to let other people know that there's a God who cares about them and wants to see other ministries prosper and move forward. There's a community that's built as these guys and women give of their time and just spend this time together. But there's a whole lot of other things people could be doing on their Saturdays. We all know this, right? The choice to invest and be generous. I think of our Reach Sports program, now its own ministry, and how God has blessed it. And part of the reason it goes the way it goes is because of hundreds of you who have given time on a Saturday or a weekday or another time to invest again in making a program work so that kids can come into an environment where they're loved and the message of Jesus is shared with them and with their family. And so many people, again, of different ages participate to make it work. Very generous. I think of many of you and some who are no longer here who in 2004 made a commitment financially to say, we will give, we will be generous so that we can add on to the facility that God has blessed us with. And the building that we're sitting in right now is built in 1973. It was completely remodeled and we built the wraparound around it in 2004. And many of you have given and are continuing to give sacrificially so that we can continue to pay down the mortgages. We started off with $2.5 million. We're down to 600,000. God is blessed. And some of it's been through large gifts. We had somebody who stepped up and paid off our second mortgage, 300 and some thousand in one shot. I still don't know who you are, but thank you. But others of us, you know, it's $10 a week or $20 a week or whatever it is, and that number just keeps coming down because of your generosity. And the ministry that has taken place in this facility, from the classes to the community groups to the support groups to kids ministry and all the things that happen because we've been blessed with this facility that God has given to us, is because of generosity. More recently, and maybe on a little bit smaller scale, somebody was generous and donated these TVs for the Welcome Center so that we could refresh and improve that area and make it more communicative. And looks great. Did such a good job. Generosity comes in so many different ways and shapes and sizes. I think of the group last weekend, over 40 strong, who were in Kensington serving meals, over 400 meals. And they've been doing this every 3 months. Morgan and Louise organize this group, and it just continues to grow as people invest their resources and their time to be a part of this. And the blessing, I know, has gone both ways. It's not just for those who attend and benefit from the food, but also for those who go and serve. It means giving some time on a Saturday, perhaps spending some money or some time to make some food, but boy, what a great thing is happening. I think of our involvement with Operation Christmas Child and the people who have given of their time to make that happen, and many of you have given of your resources to pack a shoebox, and we'll be launching that again in a couple of weeks, and another opportunity to just send a gift to a child that you may never meet or never hear from. But knowing that in that box, not only are some tangible items for them to enjoy, but also the message of hope that can be found through Jesus Christ. What a great opportunity for us to be generous with what God has given us. And I love to see that happen as our kids bring in those boxes in November. And then because of generosity, great things happen in other areas of the world. This picture is of the children's home in Cambodia that was just a dream a couple of years ago. Greg and Jane wanted to offer a place for moms who had kids who were working in the factories, many times who are separated from their children, who have to stay back in the villages, and now offer a home where moms could be with their kids, have childcare while they go to work. And this home is now a reality, and they have women who are living there even now. And much of that has been because of people like you and your generosity to give towards this project. Again, a place that some of us, many of us, may never see other than in pictures. But an opportunity that God has given us to invest. You see, as we give of our time, of our talent, of our treasure, and yes, even of our words, of our tongue, God takes it and multiplies it and uses it in tremendous ways, greater ways than we could even imagine, because that's the kind of God that He is. And as we see happen so often, because God loves to give, He blesses us far more than we end up giving. But He loves to challenge us. See, He doesn't promise us, you give, like I said, and I will give you this amount on this day in this way. We'd all like that. But God says, no, trust me. Like a child trusts their parents, trusts his father. Trust me that my heart towards you is good. And give because it's good for you, and it helps you let go of things that keep you in a self-centered cage, and it releases you to move towards Christ-likeness, being Christ-centered, and the freedom and the joy that comes with that. That's what generosity is about. Not just give more, give more, give more. It's about be a part of what God is doing as God leads you to do that. We never want to be a place where you feel like we are pressuring you to give financially. That is not what we're about. For over 150 years, God has provided for Davisville Church. I'm pretty convinced that He's going to keep doing it. But He does it over and over again through His people. That's how He does it, as He lays on their hearts to give. And we are overjoyed to see some of the things that we've been able to do because of that kind of generosity. But He loves to give. So why be generous? Why be generous? There's no greater reason I can think of is be generous because of what Jesus has given us. Be generous because Jesus has modeled and given so much for you and for me. This verse in Romans chapter 8, verse 32 says this: He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all. What was most precious to him. You're talking about, God, what have you given for me? I don't feel like you've been very generous to me. I gave you Jesus. I gave you my son. And I asked him to come and die an ugly, humiliating death for you. That's what he did. Because he loves us. But gave him up for us all. How will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? See, the beautiful picture of God is he wasn't done giving back in AD 30, 33, whenever it was in that time frame that Jesus came and died. That wasn't the end of God's giving. He continues to give. And the idea is if he's given us Jesus and that's his heart, isn't he a God who's going to keep giving? Why would he stop? He will continue to give because that's his character. And as we become more like him, our character moves into a giving character, a generous character. And so may we all be generous in light of how God has been generous to us through Jesus. What does it look like for you? What does it look like for me? Is there some time that God's calling you to give? Is there a talent that you have that God wants you to invest in a new or different way that he wants to use for his glory? Is there financial or material resources that he is saying, hey, I want you to be generous? Well, then be generous in whatever way God leads you to do that. And with your words, with your tongue, we can all be generous in the things that we say that encourage people and lift them up. And know, let them know that there's a God who loves them and designed them with beauty and purpose and talent. May we be people who regularly relate that to one another. Would you pray with me? Father, thank you for being generous to us. And you have been. You have been. And you continue to be. Lord, help us to trust you. Help us to be like that widow. It's not the amount necessarily. It's really about, God, I trust you. I sense that this is what you desire me to do, and so I'm going to do it. May we do that with joy. I know sometimes we do it with a little trepidation, like, oh boy, I'm not sure how this is going to work out. But as we do it and we see you step in and provide, as we see the truth of you giving, pressed down, shaken together, running over, when we see those realities, build our faith that we can be people who are like, oh, I'll never outgive God. So I know whatever it is he's calling me to give, I can do it. Because he will meet me there. He will provide for me. Because you love us. And I'm so grateful for that. So help us to be generous people. To let go of those things that might hold us back. Those self-centered attitudes that we can so easily have. All of us, Lord. And instead we continue to move us. Move us in the spectrum of being Christ-centered. For your name's sake, I pray. Amen.